You are listening to the Creative Pivot Podcast, and I am your host, Heather B. This podcast is all about Gen X and baby boomer women who are taking on new careers, businesses, ventures, maybe writing a book, all of us making pivots in our lives. We talk about things that might have stopped us from taking the leap when we were younger and why things are a little sweeter at this point in our lives. For me, it was all about embracing my creativity to really find my pivot and figure out what I wanted out of this one life that I have. I hope these stories inspire you to find your own creative pivot. So today I'm chatting with Karen Huck, and Karen and I met through the Mob Nation, mom-owned businesses. Let me just start by saying that if you don't have an awesome networking group in your life like the Mob, I seriously recommend you find one. Having a group of amazing women that embrace the pivots, the bumps in the road, and just help to celebrate one another, it's just really good for the soul. So after a career spent in early childhood education, Karen retired and decided that she wanted to start her own business. So she asked what she wanted to do, what she liked to do with her time, and she realized that she loved hanging out with animals, don't we all? So she started No Worry Furry Care, a pet and house-sitting business in the Portland metro area here in Oregon. But wait, that seems like a pretty big pivot, right? Well, that isn't what we are talking about today. Because Karen had done another pivot in her life. She wrote a book called An Overwhelming Gift that documents her journey to find her birth family. She says during our interview that she is so glad that she went on this journey in her 40s and not in her teens. She wouldn't have been able to really understand what everyone had gone through if it wasn't for having some life experience of her own as well. She talks about the research that she did, the people that helped her, and also recommendations for if you are maybe on this journey of your own to find your own birth parent, or maybe you're an adoptive parent and you're just thinking about how you might help your child in the future. So I just really hope you enjoy this interview with Karen Huck. Karen, I'm so glad you have joined me today. So why don't we just start off by having you introduce yourself?
I'm Karen Huck, and I was born in 1956 and was adopted at birth. And that's a different time and place than certainly now. And as I got older, I, of course, wanted to find my family, my biological family. But I had always been told that my family had been killed in a car accident, and that's why I was adopted, which was very commonplace to say to children in the 50s. And so as a high schooler, I really wanted to find that family. But I was afraid I would hurt my mom's feelings. And so I didn't look. And then as my mom was dying, I thought, I'm going to start looking. Maybe I have brothers and sisters. I spent my life looking everywhere I went, meaning looking at people thinking, oh, they kind of look like me. Maybe they're my parents. And so I started my journey in the 80s, and I was on that journey for almost 16 years. And then at 40 years old, I found my biological family.
When did you find out that they hadn't been killed? In a car crash? When did you?
Right. Well, actually, I found out because I had someone helping me. I was born in Roswell, New Mexico. And so when you live in one state and you're trying to look in another state, it becomes difficult. and so a woman named Sally File in Albuquerque, New Mexico, was a searcher because she actually was adopted herself too, and she wanted to help others. And by the time I had found Sally, she had helped 1,000 people find their families. So clearly Sally knew the ins and outs, and this was in her own state. So that she also although she never gave me names, never told me resources, she was the one that said, your parents did live in Roswell, New Mexico. And they, at that point in time, she said, I think they're both alive. They were not both alive, but, and so then became my real search, you know, I mean, I just really plowed ahead then. And Sally was a very good advice person when it came to this. She'd seen a lot of things happen. And she said to me, you have to keep your eyes open, Karen. You can go through this search and they could just slam the door in your face. You know, they may not want to meet you at all. You don't know the reasons they gave you up for adoption. You don't know any of that. And part of the reason my search did take so long is because I was searching for my mother. And my mother was dead. She would have died when I was five. And so that I kept hitting roadblocks. And that's why. And when I say I searched for 16 years, I would stop for periods of time each year. You know, you just would get frustrated. So when I started my search, Sally said, I was living in Burbank, California at the time. And she said, go to the library and look through the phone books. And because I had my last name was Rapone, and thank goodness, you know, and I started going through phone books and there are pockets of Rapones everywhere. And one day the lady at the library felt so sorry for me because you can't take phone books out of the library. If you're my age, you'll remember that, but you can't. And she said to me, what are you doing? And I told her, and she said, you know what, just take it. And then just take one and then return it to me and I'll let you take another one. And I said, okay. So I talked to some very interesting people, but to no avail, that didn't work. So.
Yeah. Cause I mean, you have to think about what resources were also available to you at that time and going to the library and looking up in the phone book or old newspaper articles or birth announcements or, you know, like right. getting the microfiche and looking at, like, that was the way you had to do all of your research.
Right. And New Mexico was not a state that was going to give you any information. It was very difficult to get anything out of them.
Yeah, that's important to think too, that every state has completely different rules about this.
Exactly. And they still do. It's not that, that's a, probably the one thing that hasn't changed. Mm-hmm. That's an interesting thing too. So
who was the first sibling that you met and what was it like kind of in anticipation of that meeting?
Well, I didn't meet a sibling first. I met my father first. Found my father. What happened was 16 years later, then the internet came into play. I mean, I didn't have the internet when I started and I had a last name. So I found my father who was living in Florida, which is it's funny in a sense that, Florida is where a lot of, fathers who don't want to pay child support, go to live because that wasn't the case for me, but I laughed, because I'd worked in early childhood my whole career and I just knew that fact. And so I found him. And when I did, his wife answered the phone and, she had been told that I died. So that whole side of the family was told that I died. Wow. So the baby died. So it was a shock, you know, and she said, when were you born? And when, like, she knew that I had existed, but she didn't know I was alive. So, I talked to her for quite a bit and then she got me in contact with my dad. And then within weeks, we got on a plane and went to Florida, my whole family, and my children and my husband and I. I was afraid to go alone. Anyway, when we met him, he told me where all my living siblings were living. And that's how I found out. And I met my brother, my older brother. I was the fourth of five. So I met my brother, Mike. And he actually flew at that point. We had moved to Auburn, California, and he flew to me. And we spent a lot of time together, and he and I looked very much the same. I mean, my kids would tell you today, we have the same mannerisms, all those kinds of things. And he gave me a lot of history on the family. And then Mike let me know that I had had a brother who was 13 months older than I, and he was killed in a car accident as a teenager, and but that I had two living sisters. And my oldest sister lived in Roswell, and my youngest sister lived in Georgia. So once my brother had given me that information, and we had had a week together to kind of, you know, hash things out, and I guess to tell family stories. And I also found out at that point that theoretically we each were from different fathers. Although the brother, Mike, that came to visit me, and I think, and many others think, that we are full blooded, and because, and we were the two that were given up. So the second and the fourth child were given up. So it's just an interesting thing. But I do have to say that he was given to his paternal grandparents, and he couldn't live with the fact that our mother would have given him to somebody that wasn't really his paternal grandparents. And he didn't like my father very much. So I don't think he could live with that either. And so it was his journey, and I had to let that part go. But I still, to this day, think he's my full-blooded brother. And he and I truly are the ones that became the most close after I met everybody.
And how, so kind of alluded to it at the start, but you wrote a book about your journey and, you know, like you said, for your kids, for yep. yourself, to help others, so that you could share some of these resources with them and be that kind of helping person like, you know, you had on your journey. Yep. So why don't you talk a little bit about the book and when that kind of came up?
Well, I wrote a book called An Overwhelming Gift that is currently on Amazon. And I wrote it really to put all of this into one place. I had kept a journal, but I wanted my children to have the background. I mean, when people start looking for their families, they say it's medical reasons. And I am sure that that's part of the reason, but I am also sure that that really isn't the reason. You want to know who you are, you know, in some, you know, people would look at me and growing up and go, oh, you must be Italian. But I didn't know that for sure. And I wanted to know those things. And I wanted my children to know those things. I knew their father's side. But, and so I kind of wanted all of that to go into one book. And so I wrote it for them. I wrote it because so many people, after I came home from meeting everybody, I went to Roswell, New Mexico, and my oldest sister was living there, who had been taken in by my aunt, who and grew up with my aunt. And I went to Georgia and found my sister living in a trailer in the middle of dirt. And she was the youngest one. And I needed to put this down all in one place, you know, and I wanted to have the end of the book to be resources for people if they were starting out. There are free things that you can do when you start your search. And Sally did everything for me for free. And thank goodness, because I don't think I would have been able to finish if I hadn't had Sally. But there's also things at the end of the book that, you know, you can look at yourself and go, okay, these are the questions I need to ask myself. Can I do this? Do I want to go through this? Or am I too young to do this? I mean, I'm thankful now when I reflect back that I didn't find anybody at 18. I don't think I would have understood where they were all coming from. I'm thankful that I found them at 40 and that I could sift through all of that as an adult who had their own children and know what it's like to have to do that. You know, I want to be a listening ear. I don't know that I could do anybody's search for them. It was exhausting for me. But when I came back home, I started a support group. I asked Sally how I could pay her back and she said, start one. And I talked to so many interesting people. Even a young girl who 5 years later called me and said, I found my family, my father on death row and I can't finish. And I said, you don't have to. You have the information that you wanted and now you know, and you don't have to do that. And, you know, there's good and bad stories with everything that come along. And so I wanted, you know, like I said, I wanted my book to be helpful to others, have the story for my children. And to be honest, you know, they say children who are adopted have holes in their souls and they need to be filled. And this culminated that, you know, I know it, my adoption story turned out great. And I don't have that hole in my soul anymore.
What would your recommendation be if someone knows that they've been adopted? They kind, you know, like they have the feeling like they're ready to kind of find, to dig a little deeper and that. You know, getting your book is a good way to start with all the resources. But what do you think are the first steps to really know if you're ready or not to kind of start on that journey?
Sounds so cliche, but I think you just know. You know that that's what you want to do. I think you need to have the support of those around you, be it, are you still living with your adoptive parents and how is that going to feel? Or your own family that you're living with, you know, I think you need to sit them down and say, this is why I want to do this. But I think like with anything, you just know that inside you have to do this. You have to know more. And you just start, be it, there's an organization in Reno that you can put your name in. And if your biological parents are looking for you and it becomes a match, they will match you up if it's okay. And, you know, I think it's baby steps because a search takes a lot of hard work I don't know. You just know. You just know. I don't know how else to say that.
Well, and you talked about something I think that is important, that, you know, when you were 40, you were kind of ready. You know, you have a certain amount of life experience to process and know that emotions are going to come up. There's going to be things that you're not prepared for necessarily, and to have that kind of life experience to process it in a different way that you just don't have when you're 18.
Right.
What have your kids thought about this whole process? I mean, you must have been researching and things, and they can remember you like really kind of digging into all that. Yeah. But what did they think when they first got to kind of meet these other family members?
Well, my children were pretty young when we found them. My daughter was 11 and my son was 9. I don't know how much they understood the search part of it, right? Because I did that when they were in school. But I will tell you that the night I found them, my husband had gone to soccer practice with my son, I think, and my daughter was there with him too. And when they came upstairs and saw me crying on the phone, they said, "What's wrong?" And I said, "I found my family." And they were like, "No." They couldn't believe it. And then they all went with me to Florida. And my daughter's reaction was, "Look at mom. She talks with her hands just like her dad does. Look at her. Look at them. And she looks just like them, you know." And one night we were sitting at dinner and my son went, "You guys have the same ears." And then my husband, my father brought out a picture of my mother because she was dead. And my son looks just like my mother because he's blonde haired and blue eyed. And my husband is as dark haired as I am. And so when we had Chad, we're like, everybody was like, "Where did he come from?" You know, I mean, and again, you know, there's another reason you start looking. It's like, yeah, where, how do we get a blonde headed kid? You know? So, but over the years, there's been many a person who said, "Oh, I'm adopted," to one of them. And they'll say, "You should talk to my mom. You should hear my mom's story," you know, or my daughter will call and say, "Mom, there's somebody I got to give your book to." They were adopted and they're struggling. And I think that they're proud of me and they're glad to know all these things. Going to Florida and meeting my dad was also very interesting. We all did something as a family together. We were there at Thanksgiving time, so we had Thanksgiving dinner with them. And then one day my dad said to my husband, "Would you mind if I just took Karen by myself one day to, you know?" And my husband said yes. And my kids were like, "You think we should let mom be going with him by herself?" You know, like, because I didn't know him, you know. Mm-hmm. And my husband was like, "She'll be fine. She'll be fine." So it was, my kids loved, you know, meeting my siblings. Although, especially my brother, Mike, because he came to our home. But they are so much different than I am that, we don't celebrate holidays. I am really glad that I met them all and have had that opportunity. And we still, my youngest sister talks to me probably once a month. My oldest sister hasn't really talked to me since after meeting her. And I haven't made much effort, nor is she. And my brother Mike passed away. So, you know, the whole nature versus nurture thing, it really is who you grew up with, you know, that those are really your family. But to have all this background just makes me feel good. And so in turn, I think it made my children feel good too. And my husband also, when we were flying home, he said to me, he goes, "You know, Karen, anybody not adopted probably takes it for granted that when they go to Thanksgiving dinner, they look like that person they're sitting across from." And I said, "Yeah, see, I mean, when I sat there at Thanksgiving, I'm like, I look like that guy across the table. And I never had that feeling before. And I also stopped looking on street corners at people that I didn't even realize that I was doing anymore until I stopped doing it." Mm-hmm. So, there's just so many things that a family takes in on both sides that you take so for granted. So.
No, I mean, and I think, you know, you've kind of touched upon that. There's just so many little stories also kind of included in this big story.
Right.
So many little stories of, you know, that your dad worked in the circus.
Yeah.
You know, that whole thing, you know, learning more about
it. Mother died of a brain tumor, and they thought she was dying of, they thought she had MS, but they didn't have CAT scans in. Mm-hmm. And then one became available, and that's how found out that she had a brain tumor in her brain, and it was too far. And they had to drive to Philadelphia, and they lived in Ithaca, New York, you know, so, you know, and adopted mothers were told, you know, or I should say biological mothers were told, when you give a child up for adoption, you give them up and you never look back and you don't talk about it anymore, you know? And so there's just so much that my aunt, my mother's sister also, who my oldest sister lived with, she actually worked for the lawyer who did my adoption and didn't even know. I mean, by the time she worked for him, he was a judge, right? I mean, there was no reason for him to be talking about adoptions at that point in his life. But when I got to Roswell, New Mexico, and met my aunt, and my aunt said, "How did you get your last name?" And I told her, well, the lawyer, who continued to be really good friends with my adoptive parents, gave me the name. And she went, "Oh my God, I worked for him." So, I mean, there's just stories within stories within stories within this story, which was another reason, like I said, that I wrote the book, because there was so much that had irony. There was irony in some of this story that, I mean, my aunt then went to the records department because she'd worked in it and got my original birth certificate, which had been changed, but I couldn't get it as the person, right? From California to New Mexico. So there were just so many, there's just so much that I had to get it into some book form. And also, I didn't want to hurt anybody when I wrote it. I didn't. I understood what happened and why. Mm-hmm. You know? And that's good to know, because as a teenager,
as a teenager, there probably have been a lot more judgment placed, yep, on the story than you were able to do, yeah, you know,
yeah,
having a family of your own.
Yes.
So if someone wants to, you know, start this, or maybe they've been doing it, but they'd love to either work with you or work with another mentor, how would they go about kind of reaching out to you? Is that information in your book, or what, you know, what do you recommend as far as, you know, getting on Facebook? Cause I can imagine that it can be pretty lonely trying to, yeah, do it on your own, and having a support, yeah, group is probably very powerful.
It is powerful. And I probably should do that online. I did do it for a while. Mm-hmm. In podcast form, you can contact me through my business that I'm currently running, mm-hmm, which is, I'm retired now, but I have a dog sitting business, and it's called No Worry Furry Care. And I'm on Facebook and Instagram. So you could contact me that way.
So what's next for you then?
What's next for me? Well, with regard to the book and the adoption,
just regards to what you want now, you know, what you want to do.
Kind of moving forward. I'm very happy with where I am now in my life and this book. And, I would like to help people and be a listening ear. If they have questions or feelings or thoughts, or they've done the search and they just need somebody to go, okay, it's okay. You don't have to finish it if you don't want to. You know, sometimes you just need to hear that, or I would just like to help others. The rest of my life, I'm retired, right? I'm retired and being a grandma and walking dogs. And I'm so happy with that.
That sounds like a pretty good life. I think, you know, being able to hang around grandkids and dogs is, probably
and a I had been in early childhood for 35 years, and I met a lot of children and families who had either adopted or, and that it's interesting, but I was always drawn to those children even before I knew that they were adopted. So, and I've had such great conversations with parents that way. And, you know, how did I feel being adopted? And, you know, what was that roller coaster ride like? Because it does become a roller coaster at some point. And, how as a parent do you take in all that stuff that child's feeling? And I often wonder, I think one of the things that I will keep my eye on that I think is very interesting, and I don't know how I could ever be involved in it, but you know, there's a lot of children now adopted from foreign countries, and how are they ever going to be able to do that search from one country to another? And yet they're going to have the same kind of feelings I did, no matter how much they're loved and taken care of. And so I kind of want to keep my eye on that. I've kept my eye on things like children who have an open adoption and they get to meet. And, you know, how is that all working out? The children haven't gotten old enough yet that I'm keeping my eye out on that. But I want to watch those kinds of things too. So,
Yeah. I think once you've gone down that road and all that research, there's so many other things to learn about and to help. And, you know, I do this podcast just because I don't, you know, I think your story, there could be one person listening that's going to help them. And that's really what we all want to do, right? Because that one leads to another of, you know, helping each other. So I really appreciate your time today and talking about the book and talking about your life. It was a lot of fun.
Good. Thank you.
Yeah.
Thank you for having me.
I hope you really enjoyed that interview with Karen. One of the things that really stuck with me was when her husband talked to her and said, you know, so many people take for granted that when they gather around the table with their family on Thanksgiving, they can look across the table and see people that look like them, and that he really didn't understand her journey until being at Thanksgiving with her biological brother and seeing someone that looked like his wife. I think that really, you know, is the idea behind that we all have our whys, we all have our purposes of why we take on these new journeys or these pivots. And Karen talked about the idea that sometimes you just know when it's your time. As cliche as that might sound, and she even said that, you just know. So do you feel that way? Are you one of those ones maybe listening to this? You might not have a journey to go on to find your biological family, but maybe you have another journey that's waiting for you. Maybe you have a creative pivot of your own and it's time to get started. I hope you join me next time on The Creative Pivot. Thanks.